Yes, hello. Hello everyone, welcome to my talk on atoms in space, or what atoms are doing in space, or how do we get atoms into space. Yes, I'm Manuel, I'm a geodesist and researcher at the German Aerospace Center, and so I'm not a physicist, so I would be using quantum sensors or anything and not developing them myself. And my main focus is the gravity field of the Earth. On a global scale, the gravity field of the Earth allows you to monitor mass change on the whole planet. So we see an example of mass loss, for example, at the ice sheets or groundwater loss. You can do this on a global scale with satellite gravimetry. But also on a very local scale, like in your laboratory, if your experiment depends on gravity, you can take such small devices and measure gravity field in your lab. So that is my main job. So today I want to go into a little detail about cold atoms on Earth. Then what can you do to experience space on Earth if you don't want to shoot it just into space? And then we are going into space. Or we are on our way into space, as I will explain then. And as a disclaimer, my work is partly funded by Horizon Europe, and this part of the talk will be very obvious. And I will focus on quantum sensing. There are a lot of other quantum technologies, communication, cryptography, computing, which is also done or worked on to do this in space, but this is not really my topic. And as I said, I am an end user. I want to use this stuff. 2 years ago at 37C3, I asked the questions, what have atoms ever done for us? And I gave a brief introduction to quantum sensing. I want to just give a small recap so that we have like a common basis on what I'm going to talk about. So we will be using atom interferometry, or AI as we call it, for measurement of accelerations. We take a cloud of atoms, tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands, we shoot lasers at them, and at the end we say, oh nice, G, or an acceleration, if you do it correctly. So we can say atoms plus lasers gives me a measurement of acceleration. If we're on Earth, it would be gravity. If we're in space, it would be something. So the atom interferometry uses the wave characteristics of atoms, which we can manipulate with very specific laser pulses. And the atom-photon interaction, so what will happen if you shoot lasers, the correct lasers at atoms, are sensitive to accelerations. If I set up my lasers wrong, I would measure rotations. If I want to measure rotations, that's good. If I want to measure accelerations, it's not good. And we could express this more fancy, like the title of this 1992 paper. What we are doing is the measurement of the gravitational acceleration of an atom with a light pulse atom interferometer. So that would be like the professional description of what I just tried to convey. So the principle itself is pretty old, like here in 1992. It was described as the first application of atom interferometry measuring Earth's gravity field. And devices look like this. These are just two examples of mobile experiments, which are not really operated by geophysicists, as you can see by all the cables, but which have been developed in the early 2000s, late 2000s, to measure gravity on different locations. And these are experiments developed by university, and building a quantum gravimeter is a very popular first experiment if you start quantum optics. Because here you can demonstrate, okay, I mastered atom interferometry. At the end result, I have a value, and there is some geodesist that can tell me, okay, your value is correct, because if I measure gravity, someone can come with another instrument and tell me, yes, 10 correct gravity. And it's also the first step if we want to build more complex instruments. If you want like a complete inertial measurement unit, measurement of rotations and accelerations, this would be the first step. And the examples here, the left one is was developed in the scope of development of a Watt balance, which is a mean to demonstrate or to realize the SI unit of mass at the French National Metrology Institute. And the second instrument is developed at Humboldt University Berlin. It's called Gravimetric Atom Interferometer, and we were here a guest in Onsala on a campaign. But if you are an end user, you can buy such an experiment since 2017. The French company Muquans, now part of Exail, offers two types of instruments. The upper one is like the laboratory version, where you need climate control. The bottom one is like an outdoor version, which you should not leave outside in the rain. But the electronic box and the sensors are temperature stabilized so that you can use this in like a normal environment. For example, as shown here on Mount Etna, where the instrument measured for multiple months uninterrupted, monitoring this volcano. Colleagues here in Germany at the Geoforschungszentrum Potsdam, GFZ, for example, put this instrument on a truck and use it for hydrology in northern Germany. And there are other, at least on the internet, you will find other companies like offering quantum gravimeters, but this type of instrument is like the only one where you have large amount of journal articles by end users publishing their results. Okay, now let's take the first step into like space, microgravity. And the first thing you would do is you go to a drop tower or an Einstein elevator. Here we have like a very small Einstein elevator, which gives you half a second of microgravity. Your experiment will be in this, will be this small box, and you very likely cannot bring your own experiment. Like this science chamber is modified in order to do different types of experiments. But it does it very often, like every 14 seconds you will have microgravity. If your experiment has weight of a couple of 100 kilos, you can go to Leibniz University Hanover, where they have an Einstein elevator which gives you 4 seconds of microgravity 300 times per day. The limit here is the power supply of the building and not the construction of this elevator. And you don't need to have the whole building under vacuum. You just, if you need vacuum, you can put the capsule under vacuum and your experiment will be inside. If 4 seconds is not enough, you can go to Bremen. There is a drop tower at the university which offers 9 seconds of microgravity by accelerating your experiment upward, and then it falls back down. As the whole building is under vacuum, they can do it 3 times per day. At the ZAM drop tower, the first Bose-Einstein condensate in microgravity was demonstrated in like 2017 or so. And if that is not enough, you can take a plane, do a parabola flight, a zero-G flight, in which you can put multiple experiments and they will do parabolas for an hour, so you have like 30 freefall phases of 20 seconds. Here we see a French experiment which demonstrated atom interferometry in microgravity for the first time in 2009. But now you really need a rocket if you want more microgravity. You can go to Kiruna and put your experiment in the capsule I show here and put it on top of a sounding rocket. This will give you 6 minutes of microgravity. And we see here the Mayus 2 and 3 experiment. With Mayus 1, 2017, there was the demonstration of the first Bose-Einstein condensate in space. And all the facilities I showed up to now are obviously fundamental research. And there you can do experiments or you can test technologies which then go into space, for example, to a space station or to the or onto a satellite. So let's really get into space. Or better, the space stations. Space stations are nice because they are like your lab. They have room temperature, there's atmosphere. You will have operators who can operate or repair the instrument. They will probably not be able to bond optical parts back into experiment if something breaks. But if you send upgraded parts to the space station or replacement parts, they can swap out things, something you cannot do on a satellite. So for example, on the China space station, in 2022, they sent the space code atom interferometer payload, which is a self-contained experiment, which is put into the microgravity scientific laboratory cabinet, which appears to be kind of an Einstein elevator on board the space station because the microgravity is in this cabinet better than on the space station itself. And this is a two-species atom interferometer where you do, for example, tests of the weak equivalence principle. So this is a self-contained experiment. On the ISF, we have On the ISS, we have more like, yes, infrastructure. So in 2018, NASA launched the Cold Atom Laboratory, and DLR and NASA will launch the BECCAL, the Bose-Einstein Condensate and Cold Atom Laboratory in 2027. And this is infrastructure where scientists can design experiments on Earth, upload them to the space station where they will be performed in microgravity. So again, this is not like where the geoscientist says, this is very good for me. This is also, again, fundamental physics and test of technology. But I am the end user, and my topic is satellite gravimetry, so the global gravity field of the Earth. And this is, yeah, the most productive mission up to now was the GRACE mission, the Gravity Recovery and Climate Experiment, which was launched in 2002 and was operational until 2017, and followed by the GRACE Fall-On mission in 2018. So this second GRACE mission will be extended until 2029. And the satellite gravimetry mission consists of a pair of two satellites at an altitude of about 500 kilometers with a distance of 200 kilometers between them. And what we want to measure is the change of distance between these two satellites, because that depends on the gravity field of the Earth. So high gravity fields are the distance between the satellites. And we collect 1 month of data, and then we have a snapshot of the gravity field. And if we compare several of these snapshots, we will get the change of mass on Earth. So this is just one example. The authors took the whole GRACE time series and looked for changes in terrestrial water storage. And for the gravity field of the Earth, every mass change would be a change of gravity. But if you look at what happens on Earth, hydrology, water, is the most likely change. And mountain does not rise in a couple of months. Earthquakes are kind of a quick action, but they don't really show up in the gravity field on a satellite level. So here you can see, for example, what we would expect for a 15-year time span. We have measurement of ice sheets melting, or groundwater, for example, depletion in California or in northern India. But if you look at Germany or Central Europe, we also see here like a small red trend, so a decrease of terrestrial water in these areas and an increase in other areas. You will see results like this, for example, in the latest IPCC report, because the GRACE mission is the only one which can actually measure mass changes. So it's not a geometric change, it is a change of mass in the sense of there is less ice, there's less water, and not the geometric surface has changed somehow. But unfortunately, these missions have limitations. Also, the next mission, which will start in 2028, has the same limitation. There are instrumental errors, mostly in the ranging system at the accelerometer. The accelerometer is necessary to determine the non-gravitational forces acting on the satellite, which is, for example, the residual atmosphere at satellite height, solar radiation pressure, but even the light reflected off the Earth will change the satellite orbits. And with the accelerometer, you can measure this acceleration and correct your measurements of the satellite distance by this effect. The authors of the study here only looked at the instrumental contributions to the error budget of the satellite mission, and not, for example, temporal aliasing, which are rapid gravity changes, which are quicker than 1 month. I said we take 1 month of satellite data for one snapshot, but, for example, the atmosphere and the oceans have faster changes of gravity. We can correct this with climate models, with ocean models, but these models are of course not perfect. So there is some error due to this effect in our measurements. But the authors here only looked at the instrumental contributions. So this stripy picture is what we typically get as geodesists if we evaluate satellite gravity fields. We get rid of this by signal processing. But if you could use better accelerometers, the error could look like this, so a couple of centimeters instead of some tens of centimeters. And also note that the color bar here is limited. First off, the striping effects in the upper picture looks more pronounced. And secondly, if there was no limit, the bottom picture would simply look like zero, which is, of course, not correct. And there are solutions to these limitations. One is take more satellites. So with more satellites, you have better sampling of the temporal gravity changes. And if you put these satellites on different orbits, for example, a polar orbit like the current GRACE mission and an inclined orbit, which does not cover the whole Earth, but gives you observations in another direction other than north-south, the error we see in the upper picture will be more homogeneously distributed. And this is what we are looking at. So here we see the blue and green line are the sum of the dominant noise sources on the GRACE and GRACE full-on mission. You see the only difference between these two lines come from the error of the ranging system, which are the colored lines going from the bottom left to the top right. And the almost horizontal line is the accelerometer. So in these two satellite missions, they use the same accelerometer. And also the next satellite mission launched in 2028 by NASA and DLR will use this same accelerometer. So the error budget will look similar to this. For better orientation, these two lines indicate the period of a single day and the second line of a single orbit of 90 minutes. And we can see that on one orbit alone, the measurement of the accelerometer changes due to its noise behavior and not necessarily due to a real measurement. We want to solve this now with a quantum accelerometer, where we hope that we can achieve a wide noise, so this flat curve in a wider frequency spectrum. The quantum accelerometer atom interferometry relies on immutable properties of atoms. So every rubidium atom is the same, isotope is the same, and on how good we can generate laser frequencies. So these are the two main impacts on the atom interferometer that we discuss here. And now we start the EU-funded part because the European Commission in the Horizon Europe program opened a call in late 2021. And it was a larger call for developing, deploying space-based infrastructure and so on. And it covered a lot of topics, including communication, development of propulsion systems, various quantum technologies, and also quantum technologies for space. The French and German space agencies, as well as some industry partners and university partners, submitted a proposal for Carioca, which has a very long and descriptive name you can read here. And we proposed the Carioca Quantum Pathfinder mission to demonstrate a single-axis quantum accelerometer with like a noise level of 1 times 10 to the minus 10 in the best case. That was the flat line I showed on the previous plot. And let's look at a quantum accelerometer if we have it here on Earth, because I think it's more intuitive. So you start with your atoms, which you put into a 3D mod. So a 3D mod is a magneto-optical trap. This is a method using lasers and magnetic fields to slow down atoms to temperatures of a few microkelvin to nanokelvin. And you collect your atoms like in the center of this vacuum chamber, and you turn off your magneto-optical trapping. So the atoms on Earth are subject to gravity, so they will start free fall. And during this free fall phase, these atoms interact with three laser beams, which you see on the right. And each laser beam has a certain probability of an interaction between photons and atoms. And during such interaction, an atom absorbs or emits a photon, thereby gaining energy or losing energy if a photon is emitted, but also it gains or loses momentum. If a photon is absorbed, the momentum of the photon is added to the atom. Thereby, at the end, we have two different states at the detection. One state where energy momentum is gained after these three pulses, and one where the atoms are in the, let's call it, ground state. And this ratio of atoms in these two states will give me the acceleration the atoms experienced in the direction of the laser beam. So let's put this thing on a satellite. This is my satellite. This instrument uses a lot of power. So we point the solar panels at the sun. We have a sun synchronous orbit. So there is very little shadow during the mission. So the flight direction is to the side of the screen. In flight directions, the satellite will experience drag due to residual atmosphere. Not necessarily solar radiation pressure, because the sun is coming from the side. And we put our accelerometer in the center of mass of the satellite. We got rid of the tube where the atoms on Earth would fall along, because in space the atoms would stay at their position and only move due to momentum transfer with the laser light. So we can have a small vacuum chamber, not a long tube. On Earth you would need, for a high sensitive experiment, a long tube, because the time between these laser pulses determine also the sensitivity of your experiment. This is why one of the gravimeters I showed on the very first slide was like so large that it just fits through a door. They wanted a long free-fall time of the atoms. But on a satellite, the atoms stay where they are. They get only moved around by laser light. Okay, this is our basic concept of quantum accelerometer. So what we proposed for the Pathfinder mission were some primary mission objectives, which are all related to the demonstration of the technology in space. So a quantum accelerometer, and that accelerometer should measure a signal which is comparable to what a satellite gravimetry mission would measure. So the potential next application of this technology is a satellite gravimetry mission. So we want to show, okay, this instrument could work on such a mission. And there are some secondary mission objectives which make use of the data gathered by the mission. So if you have orbit data, the satellite has a GNSS receiver, and we can calculate the gravity field. And with support of the quantum accelerometer, we might even be able to improve the gravity field on the very long wavelength. But more importantly, with the measurement of the accelerometer, of the drag caused by the residual atmosphere, we can determine atmospheric parameters at orbit height. For example, the density of the atmosphere. This is a measurement type which is really sparse, because there are very little satellites, a small number of satellites, which have accelerometers on board. Most of satellites only have GNSS for this. So that would, independently of the technology demonstration, benefit just by the data we can gather. But unfortunately, we cannot just take our laboratory setup, put it in a satellite. We need some technical maturity and a category to judge technical maturity are technical readiness levels, which were introduced by NASA in the late 1980s and also adopted with a similar definition by ESA and the European Commission. So we won't go through all the TRLs, but at TRL 1, for example, you have the basic concept. So we know we can add laser light to atoms and get acceleration. Very good. If we build a setup in our lab which measures gravity, you can say, okay, here's a proof of concept of this specific type of measurement. And now if the TRL increases, your instrument gets more and more representative of what you want to send into space, and also the testing gets more and more rigorous compared to conditions in space. So at TRL 6, for example, you would have a prototype of an instrument tested under relevant conditions. So our accelerometer should operate in a vacuum in space, so we can put it in a vacuum chamber here on Earth. If it's successful, that's a good thing. We want to measure accelerations in microgravity. So we could put our prototype in an Einstein elevator and do a couple of experiments there to demonstrate, okay, our setup works in microgravity. So we don't need to send it into space to get TRL 6. Currently, there is no quantum accelerometer in space available, because we are developing one. Let's look at a couple of components that are necessary. For example, the vacuum chamber itself. You could consider TRL 6 due to a drop tower test. The lasers, which are necessary for the cooling and trapping of atoms, so the initial step of the interferometer sequence, they are TRL 6, demonstrated on the sounding rocket experiment. The atom preparation, so getting a high number of atoms at a very low temperature, is only at TRL 4, demonstrated in a lab, and partly on a drop tower, I think. And the interrogation laser, which is a different laser system responsible for the three atom interferometry pulses, is at TRL 3. So there's some technological development necessary so that you're confident of putting it into space. So what we proposed for the Carioca mission, so the call I showed earlier was successful. And we started a project called Carioca PMP, and PMP is the Pathfinder Mission Preparation. This is not a phase in the sense of like a satellite mission. This is a pre-development in which we want to build an engineering model of the sensor in the lab. This will not be space tested, but the manufacturing technologies for the vacuum system, for example, will be similar to what we sent into space. The university partners from geodesy, they perform a study, are these instrument design relevant for scientific applications, what can be achieved with this type of mission, with the Pathfinder mission, but also a follow-up satellite gravimetry mission. And the space agencies are developing a roadmap for the follow-up satellite gravimetry mission, because there are a lot of stakeholders involved if you want to get such a mission funded, like the European Commission, member states, companies, ESA, and so on. Part of this will also then be published later, 2027. So earlier this year, we finished the Carioca Phase A. So these phases are defined by ECSS standards. That is the European Corporation for Space Standardization. And they define basically what kind of documents you have to provide during a satellite phase, what kind of tests you need to perform in order to demonstrate the phase was successful. And the Phase A is basically a feasibility study. Can the concept and the requirements that we define be realized and achieve the mission objectives I mentioned earlier? And the mission objective is a successful accelerometer in space. So let's have a look what on some of the things we did in the Phase A. So we have here the satellite model, and we are looking at a mass of around 500 kilos and the area in a long track of almost 1 square meter. So this is like a cubic satellite shapeform. And I gave the graceful on parameters here for a comparison, because one of the goals is we want to measure the same signal strength which would be there for a satellite gravimetry mission. And for the atmospheric drag, this is defined by weight and the area in the flight direction, in the long track direction. And then we can take our satellite design, put it in our orbit simulator, which has models for the upper atmosphere, models for solar radiation pressure, for Earth's albedo, and so on. And we can simulate the acceleration the satellite would experience. So we have some orbit design guidelines requirements. I already talked about power, so we are on a sun-synchronous orbit. But here we have a simulation of what would the acceleration our satellite design would experience compared with measurements of accelerations of the GraceFollow-on satellite. So the red signal here is the GraceFollow-on data product for early 2020, when the satellite was at an altitude of 500 kilometers. And the blue signal is what is the simulation of non-gravitational accelerations for our satellite design on an orbit in 500 kilometers. So the data product from GRACE is shifted in time to match up basically the orbit period of our mission. And we can see that at least the amplitude adds up very well. This is interesting for the instrument designers because they need to be able to design the satellite in a way that they can measure the amplitude we expect. Of course, the blue model result does not include like this high frequency variations you see in the accelerometer data product. But we can also take the GRACE accelerometer measurements as a test for our accelerometer, which we simulate. So that also these high frequency variations at 1 hertz can be investigated, or the effect can be investigated on the atominterferometer. Unfortunately, we have directly opposing requirements. Because to determine the noise level, it would really be nice to measure zero. Because if you know I should measure zero, I measure something else, it would be instrumental noise. And depending on how the noise looks like, you could say, okay, this is laser system, this is something else. But we want to measure a real signal, so this is like a direct contradicting requirement. So in case we would choose a very high orbit where there are no non-gravitational accelerations anymore, we would need a propulsion system for for artificial drag so that we could also measure signal and we could measure zero. I will not go into detail about natural deorbiting here, but we came out with two orbit options at the end of phase A. One is like a Graceite orbit, a circular 500 kilometer orbit. And the second option would be like an elliptical orbit between 500 and 700 kilometers. At the 700 kilometers, the sensitivity of the instrument would be too low to measure the non-gravitation acceleration, so they would measure zero, hopefully. And at 400 kilometers, the signal would be larger than on a satellite gravimetry mission, so that would also fulfill our requirement. A paper on this is currently in review. We are currently in phase B, which started in October this year. And the options we have at the end of phase A will now be decided at early stage in phase B. And phase B will also do the first technological development of components to TRL-6. And developments which will not be done inside the phase B will be planned with concrete dates for the following phases. We are looking at the launch in the early 2030s, as I said earlier. But this is not the only study done on quantum sensing in space. ESA itself has funded multiple studies, not necessarily hardware development, but studies where is quantum technology benefit to Earth observation. And one of these studies, for example, is CASPER-ADM. This is the Cold Atom Space Payload Atmospheric Drag Mission, which is a CubeSat. It should fly at a very low orbit, 300 to 400 kilometers, where we have a really high signal due to atmosphere. And the aim of the mission is measurement of atmospheric density. Similar to what I mentioned about the accelerometer measurements we want to use from Carioca for. They aim at a lower accuracy, but due to the high signal, the low accuracy is still only 1% of the expected signal. And we can see this is a very small satellite, also with very small solar panel, so the atomometer cannot operate continuously, but only for a few orbits per day. And as I mentioned, ESA has funded additional studies for quantum gradiometry instrument designs, emission designs, for user requirements for a quantum space gravimetry mission in the future, which also included an end-user survey. They made scenarios what could potentially be achieved and asked different user communities, is this beneficial for you? Is this enough? Is this too much? This is also an interesting result for this. And also in case of hardware development, not a quantum accelerometer, but ESA and the French Space Agency launched the Atomic Clock Ensemble in Space earlier this year, which are two atomic clocks which are mounted on the outside of the ISS. This is necessary, or this is good for frequency transfer between two remote positions on Earth, from which you could, for example, determine height differences, as a geodesist at least. And NASA is also doing some quantum technology things. In 2024, the Earth Science Technology Office funded different projects for hardware development. One of these developments is a little bit comparable to what we do in Carioca. It's a quantum gravity gradiometer mission. Also the early 2030s, this is a schematic of the instrument. And here in this first chamber, the atoms will be generated, so from like a source, and from there they will be fed into this second chamber where they do the magneto-optical trapping, so the cooling of the atoms, similar to Carioca. But in Carioca, the atomometer would happen at this position. For this gradiometer, they transfer the atom cloud using laser light into a third chamber, and then they split this atom cloud into two and move them inside this chamber to these two positions, which are about 30 centimeters apart, in front of CCD cameras for detection. And at these two positions, the laser pulses will happen the same way as I spoke about for Carioca. So they have two accelerometers, and as they are not in the center of mass of the satellite, they will experience Earth's gravity field, and the measurement is the gravity difference between these two positions. This is a very useful information about the gravity field of the Earth, and we had such a mission using like classical accelerometers from 2009 to 2012. Funded by ESA with the GOCHE mission. So for this type of instrument, there was a paper published earlier this year. I'm not aware about the state of the hardware. So I hope I can now jump to the end. So up to now, I showed you the different types of atom sensors on Earth, on the way to space and in space, and what we are doing to achieve like a quantum accelerometer. And with this, I think I would stop here. On the one QR code, you will find the slides. You will find an extended references list, which has some review papers going into more detail about the basic concepts and the state of the art of these types of missions for quantum technology in fundamental physics, but also for classical applications. And on the second QR code, you can find more information about the Carioca mission, including videos on the technology, how specifically it should work, and what we want to achieve. With this, I am happy to answer your questions.
Thank you very much for this interesting talk, Manuel. There are microphones on the left-hand and on the right-hand side of the hall. If you have any questions, just go up to the microphones. In the meantime, we're going to start with a question from the internet.
We have one question from the internet. Why is it necessary that the atoms are cold for the tests?
So when I say cold, this is an expression of velocity. So we need atoms with a very low velocity in the nanometer or micrometer per second velocity, and you can also call this cold. So if they have a high velocity, the atom cloud will dissipate, they will enlarge, they will leave the diameter of the lasers, and the measurements will not be very good. So the colder, the less velocity the atoms have themselves, the more precise your measurements will be.
Thank you. Then we'll go ahead with microphone three, please.
Yeah, thank you for this interesting talk. I have two questions kind of related to the operation of the sensor. And the first question is, do you need to prepare a new batch of atoms for each measurement you want to take? Or can you sort of reuse the same atoms over and over again? And then if so, how do you manipulate the atoms? How do you get them to go where you need them to be? And especially, how do you get them out of the chamber once you're done?
So there are schemes to reuse atoms for terrestrial experiments. It's kind of juggling, I think it's called. But here for this type, we use the atoms once, and they are only in resonance with the laser field when they are brought there into the magneto-optical trap, where the atoms accidentally in the area of the magneto-optical trap during this trapping scheme, they would be trapped with the rest of the atoms which come into the chamber new. But other way, I think they will be pumped out by the vacuum pump, by the Eigenkatter pumps.
Okay, thank you. And maybe if I may follow on question, how long does it take? Like one cycle of preparing this and then resetting it up?
So yes, I did not mention this in the for the Carioca experiment. So we are looking at capital time T, so this interval between the individual laser pulses of 1 to 2 seconds, and the initial trapping of the atoms will also take about 1 second. So in theory, we could do a measurement every 4 seconds.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, I believe we have time for one more question. Microphone four, please.
Hi, I rather comment. You mentioned Quantus 1 first, yes. Bose-Einstein concept in microgravity.
Yes, I did the date wrong, I guess.
Yes, that was 2010.
2010, yes.
2017, you mentioned, was Mayus 1.
Yes, correct.
BEC in space.
Yes, yeah. That's correct.
Okay, perfect. Thank you very much. I think this concludes our time. Thanks again for the talk. Give a warm round of applause.
Okay, thank you.